Let's begin the mitzvah of V'yahavta l'recha kamocha. Now, everything else we discussed this semester in the mitzvah ben el l'chaveiro is related to this mitzvah of Ahavat Yisrael. Okay? Of loving another like you love yourself. It's like the core that everything else revolves around. Let's have a look. Let's see the pasuk in the Torah, and let's see it's related to something else that's mentioned at the beginning of the pasuk, which we're going to speak about. It says in Vayikra, in Parashat Kedoshim, Lotikam, do not take revenge, Velotitor, do not bear a grudge, et b'nei amecha, against your people, V'yahavta l'recha kamocha, you should love others like you love yourself. Ani Hashem, I am God. Okay? So first of all, what's taking revenge? What's taking revenge? Anybody know? Someone define, please, taking revenge. You said two things. Hold a grudge, then act against them. Maybe you're not holding a grudge. Maybe we just act against them.
Payback.
Give me an example.
If someone hits you, you hit them back.
Okay. Someone hits you, you hit them back. How about... speak badly against them.
Yeah.
Okay. How about... I come over to your... home, and I'm like, I'd like to borrow your car. Okay? And you're like, no, I'd rather not. No, I don't trust you with it, Rabbi. You're a crazy driver. You have enough points on your license, and I like my car in one piece. The next day, you come up to me, and you're like, Rabbi, can I borrow your lawnmower? Because you need to... So I'm like... you didn't lend me your car. I'm not lending you my lawnmower. This, says Rashi, is the definition of... well, he doesn't use the car and lawnmower example, but that's the basic concept that Rashi brings down of taking revenge. You didn't do it to me. So I'm not going to do it to you. Now, it could be verbal. It could be that you don't say anything. You just say no. Now, you are entitled to not lend me your car. And I'm entitled to not lend you my lawnmower. You don't have to lend everything to everyone all the time. That's for sure. However, if the reason I don't lend it to you is not because I don't trust you with my lawnmower, because you're, you know, a 8-year-old, and I'm scared you're going to lose some limbs under it, but my reason for not lending it, listen carefully, is because you did not lend it to me, I've taken revenge. That is a Torah prohibition. Same Torah that says, don't eat pig. Same Torah that says, don't eat chametz. Same Torah that gives any negative, don't drive on Shabbat, is now saying, you're not allowed to take revenge. And that is the definition, according to Rashi, of revenge. Well, if that's revenge, then what is netira, lo titor? What's bearing a grudge? What's bearing a grudge? Not getting over something that happened, having a bad opinion. Okay. Yeah, for sure. Revenge, but they're both coming from events that happened. Right, right, right. Question is the reaction to them. Jen, you wanted to just have a stab?
I have an example.
Is this a personal example, or are you just thinking up?
Just when I learned about.
Okay.
It's just so it's just made up. Like with your car and lawnmower example, like if I asked to borrow your car and you said no, and then the next day you asked to borrow my lawnmower and I said, you know, like, unlike you who wouldn't let me borrow your car, you can surely have my lawnmower.
Says Rashi, exactly like you're saying. You, I go to Jen. I'm like, Jen, can I borrow your car? And Jen says, no, which she's entitled to, say, by the way, this is really, really difficult. I'm telling you, I'm going to explain to you what bearing a grudge means, and it is the hardest thing to overcome. Again, once again, I'll say it again. You could have 1,000 Yom Kippurs. You could do 1 Yom Kippur a week. Easy compared to just one instance of this. So Jen says no. Next day, Jen comes to me, and she's like, hey, Rabbi, can I borrow your iPhone? I don't know. And I'm like, I'm not like you, Jen. I lend things to people. I'm friendly and nice. Of course you can borrow it. And I give it to her. Now, that's not revenge, because revenge would be not giving it to her. That would be nekama. That's revenge. Here, I'm giving it to her, but I'm holding on to the anger, the upset, the grudge that I hold against her for not lending me. But I gave it to her. Isn't that the most important thing? She wanted an iPhone. She didn't have to lend her car. I didn't have to lend my iPhone. I did give it to her, and I gave it to her. So I merely said, or by the way, possibly even thought, I'm better than you. I lend things, and I give it to her. It's in my mind. That's Natira. That is Rashi's famous definition of bearing a grudge. And we're going to see in the list of the mitzvot, some combine them, don't bear a grudge, don't take revenge, don't bear a grudge, and some actually separate them into two separate members of the Tariag mitzvot. Tariag being the 613 mitzvot. Okay? Very, very difficult. Very, very difficult. I mean, our whole lives are made of this. She was nasty to me, I've got to be nice to her. And when I'm nice to her, I've got to be nice to her in a open, loving way, completely disregarding the first occurrence. Now, we're going to see later on, the Rambam's going to speak, and the Rambam's going to say, if someone does something to you that upsets you, you are entitled to speak to them and tell them. Okay? Let's have a look how we understand this. Okay, first of all, let's see Unklus. Now, Unklus is the Aramaic translation by Unklus, a ger to Judaism, that is always in a chumash and next to Hashem's words. So when you translate it, you really are commenting on it, and that's what Unklus did. His translation is considered to be an interpretation and understanding. So he translates this the following way. He says, Lo tikam lo titor, devavu levnei amecha, v'terachem lechavarecha kvasach an Hashem. He says this idea of loving your neighbor, which is put at the end of this pasuk that says, don't take revenge, don't bear a grudge, he says it comes from be compassionate. So he's defining the idea to love others like you love yourself as being compassionate towards them. Show them rachmanut. Have rachmanut to people. So she didn't want to lend me her car. That's her business. She needs to use my iPhone. That is my business. I should have mercy and say that the two are two completely separate events. I didn't hear that, sorry. Compassion is not the same as mercy. And compassion to someone, I am merciful towards them. What's the difference? Mercy is?
Mercy feels like you could have the ability to do something bad to them, but you're merciful and you choose to do the right thing.
So, and having compassion is?
Simply being nice. You don't even have that bad thought.
I'm compassionate. Merciful is? Well, I'm merciful towards, you know, a poor person on the street. I have mercy towards them, so I give them something. Okay. I don't know if that works in Hebrew. In Hebrew, we call it rachmanut.
And they're both the same.
I think they're both considered the same, yeah. I mean, there's different branches within it, I guess, but I think they're considered the same. I mean, I'm hearing what you're saying. I'm just not sure if they make such a difference. Interesting. I don't have to think about that. I don't think they put that down as a difference. Okay. Okay. So let's have a look at the very famous comment of Rabbi Akiva. And we mentioned this already. And it says, V'hafta recha kamocha. Rabbi Akiva omer. Rabbi Akiva says, what is that? Ze klal gadol gadol batorah. Ze klal gadol batorah. Amar Rabbi Akiva. Okay? So Rabbi Akiva says, Ze klal gadol. So we discussed this, and we said, how could that be a klal gadol? I mean, honoring parents, klal gadol. I'm the Lord your God, Anoch Hashem Elokecha, that's a klal gadol. Why would V'hav L'Recha Mocha be a klal gadol? So the Gemara has a question on that. And the Gemara gives a story to help us understand this. And the story is told of a non-Jew who came before Shammai and said, convert me, however, please teach me the entire Torah while I'm standing on one foot. Okay? Shadmateni kol Torah kula kashani oimed al regel achas. Standing on foot. Shammai took a stick and he gave him a zetz and said, get out. Get out of my place. And he pushed him away. So the Gentile went to Hillel instead. And he said to Hillel, help me become a Jew while standing al regal achas. Give me the, just encapsulate the whole thing for me. What's it all about? And Hillel said very, very famously, Da'alach sani lechvre lo tavid. Da'alach sani, whatever you hate, to your friend, do not do. Right, which is the opposite, actually, I mean, the two sides of the same coin, of if you whatever you love, do fathers. And over here, we're saying, Hillel seems to agree, but gives it on the flip side, and says, whatever you hate, don't do to others. That, he says, is what all of Judaism is all about. That's what it comes down to, which is very hard to understand. I mean, trust me. And what's that got to do with matzah? What's that got to do with anything? What's that got to do with tefillin? I hear maybe tzedakah, I understand, or leaving the corner of your field, payah for the poor people. But why would that? Why would that count? But he said that is the basic concept. Zimel gamor. Go, zil, get out of here. Gamor, go learn more. That is your foundation. Everything else is going to come out of that idea. And the Kliyaka says, this non-Jew wasn't just like playing games. He wasn't being sarcastic. He wasn't trying to be offensive. He wanted to know, before he set out on this journey to become Jewish, if there's one thing that can really sum it up. Right? The idea of one foot being, is it just like one punchline, one bumper sticker that can represent the Jew? If the Jewish people were a car, what would our bumper sticker be? That's what you're saying. Right. So before I venture out, which is, I mean, according to Shammai, I guess, a very dangerous game to play. Right? You can't summarize all of Torah and all Jewish thinking and everything into one line, but according to Hillel, you can. Okay? So Hillel gave him, actually, not just a nice piece of advice. That's what I want to point out to you. He gave him something where he could help him understand everything else. And by the way, if you really go into this mitzvah, we're going to see it does help you understand everything else, even the mitzvah between Adam L'makom between us and Hashem. Okay? In other words, even the business mitzvot, which don't seem related to this whatsoever, are related to this. So for example, just top of my head, but I must mention it, we eat matzah. Why eat matzah? To remember Mitzrayim. Why happened to Mitzrayim? We were slaves. What do we have to learn? Be nice to slaves. Okay, so every mitzvah, ultimately, if you get down to it, can really go back to this one thing. if you can master this idea, if you can live a life of Havrecha Kamocha, everything else will sit in very, very nicely. Okay? And the Sefer Chinuch, next page, speaks about this, and he actually lists it among the 630 mitzvot. And if you want to know which number it is, he makes it number 243. Right? He starts in Bereshit, right? And he ends at the end of the Torah, and he goes right through the Torah, and he says, there is a mitzvah. How does he define this mitzvah? Lehav kol achav Yisrael ahavat nefesh. There has to be a soul love between us and every other Jew. It's one big family. He calls it ahavat nefesh. Klomar, what does that mean? Shenachmol al Yisrael v'amamana, you should have compassion over another Jew and their money. Now, you didn't choose that word by coincidence. You have to care for another person's money, not just their body or their spiritual welfare. We're not there to make people lose the money. How much? Just like you take care of yourself and your money. Why do you think he mentions money? Why does he mention money? Of all the things to mention, why do you think the Sefer Chinuch brings that out, that we should really take care of other people's money?
It's also like something that you really want to take from other people.
So I think, I'm to agree with you, I think the reason he gave that is because there's this natural thing, this natural inclination where people seem to think that I could be nice to someone, but I could take their money. They're not contradictions. We're doing business. I'm nice to you. I'm respectful. I welcome you to my office. I give you coffee. I give you tea. When it comes to business, now I can steamroll you. Right? I can squeeze every penny out of you. I can charge you whatever I want because you need the product. I can crush you like a grape to pull out all the juice. Doesn't mean I don't love you. I just love your money. A little bit more. I love you. So I think the Chinuch chose that for a very specific reason. That people seem to put money, and he's talking to the Jewish people, so I'm going to say maybe Jewish people put money in a different category than everything else. When it comes to acting nicely towards other people, they're very, very nice and sweet. And we never hurt them. And we never slap them. And we never maybe insult them. Or haven't been speak lashon hara about them. But when it comes to money, hey, open season. I got my hunting license. You know what? Money's money. As the famous joke goes, Moses, Moses, business is business. You know that joke? The little kid is in class. He's in a Christian school. And the teacher says, okay, who was the greatest person that ever lived? Very religious Christian teacher. So one kid puts up his hand and says, I don't know, Julius Caesar. It's like, no. Another kid put up his hand. Who's the greatest person that ever lived? It's like, I don't know. Abraham Lincoln. It's like, no. There's a one little Jewish kid in class, puts up his hand, and he says, Jesus. And the Christian teacher says, I mean, you're right. That's what I was thinking of. But you're a Jewish boy. Why would you say Jesus? Right. And he says, hey, Moses is Moses, but business is business. Mm-hmm. I'm in class. Right. I want to get the points. I want to get what I need to do. I need to get the grade. So I'm willing to make this separation between my beliefs and business. And Judaism, we put the two together. Which is why, by the way, interestingly enough, we have this idea of the separation of, you know, church and state. All this. In Judaism, we don't have that separation. We put all of the dealings, the Sanhedrin, according to Jewish law, has to be put, that was the court of law, has to be put next to the Beit HaMikdash, next to the center of spiritual life. The two had to be put physically next to each other. They were geographically close. And the idea being that we don't separate them out. You can't say I'm a nice person, so you've been a business and action and dealing with other people. I'm a nasty individual. Right? The two are seriously connected. So if you really do love someone, take care of them like you love you, and you don't want to lose your money, you don't want to spend $5 without watching exactly where it goes, then don't expect your friend to spend or lose $5. Imagine it's your money. Imagine that. Imagine if we all walked around in life imagining everyone else's money is our money. Imagine that. Wow. I would just like constantly be like, so what are you doing with your money? Where are you spending it? Where's it going? It's like, well, I went to Starbucks. I said, Starbucks? Are you crazy? Starbucks? $8 for a cup of coffee? You could have gone down the street and gone for $4. I'm like, what's going to do with you? I was like, I care for your money. I care for you. There's a sale going on. Are you aware there's a sale going on? 20% off. Here's a ticket. Oh, you bought from that place? You should buy over here. It's much cheaper. I'm like, what's going to do with you? It's their money. Spend it what they want. I want to help them. I don't want to waste their money. Why not? Because I don't waste my money either. Money support groups. You like that? That will do well, actually, in the Jewish world, I think. I'm just saying, don't shoot the messenger. I'm saying what the Sefer Chinuch says. Sefer Chinuch says, if you love someone, you take care of their money as well.
Is that limited to why you can't do interest?
Why you cannot? Yes, it is actually related. It is related to the idea of ribis, of not charging another due interest. I guess it's connected. It's its own thing, but I guess you could say it's connected. The idea being that we make it like in a deal, it's a Torah law, that I don't charge you interest, you don't charge me interest. Because we're in the family. Just like if your father would, you know, want to borrow money from you, I mean, you wouldn't charge your father interest, would you? Okay, don't answer that question. I'm assuming, like, hey, daddy, all right, you need $50, here you go. $55 by Monday morning. I'm like, that's like not good. All right, so it's connected in the sense that the reason that mitzvah actually exists, the reason it exists because the Torah tells us to do it. But the reason it's because we're family. And that's actually why you're allowed to charge a non-Jew interest. Right? Well, there's two reasons why. One is they charge you interest, you can charge them interest. Okay? So it's fair is fair. But also because it's family. Right? And the non-Jew is not family. In other words, the natural state of affairs is to charge interest. There's nothing bad with charging interest. It's understandable, it's acceptable, it's respectful, and it's okay. We just don't do it to other Jews because they're family. So we go above the letter of the law. There's nothing wrong with charging interest. Right? Everyone charges interest. Everyone does. It's understandable. You take my money and, you know, you're using it for your purposes and I'll take some, little bit back with it. That's okay. There's nothing cruel or evil or mean about that. People think, oh, it's a real mean thing. We don't charge Jews interest, we charge a non-Jew interest. Not at all. We just expect it to hold a higher standard when it comes to the rest of the Jewish people, which is like family. You get it? So that's the idea of ribis. Yeah. Okay. And Sefer Chinuch carries on that mitzvah, and he says it's common sense. Yep. That if you follow the v'havdarecha kamocha down the line, then you know if you love someone else, and people love money. You know, people love their own money. People love money more than they love themselves. People are willing to literally love money more than love themselves. We're getting sick and all the rest of it and all just over money. I mean, we all do to some degree, you know. That shows that we're putting money on a very high pedestal, so it's very, very precious to us. So it should be precious to other people as well. That's the idea that goes behind it. Yeah? So that's one side. So the other side is also things that you don't like being done to you, don't do to them. So I'm going to love you, so I'll take care of your money because you are your money, and I respect that. And I want, you know, someone loving me for my, loving me, I will take care of my money. So I love my money, I take care of my money. I love you, I take your money as well. But there's a flip side, and that is, and by the way, we're going to relate a lot of other mitzvah to this as well. We're going to see the laws of Lashon Hara are going to come with certain stipulations. If you think someone's going to be hurt financially, you're obligated to speak to them and maybe help them as well. Even if it is technically Lashon Hara, it could hurt the person you're speaking about. Okay? So we're going to come to the laws of Lashon Hara as they relate to all of this. Right. If I really take care of you and I see you're about to get involved in a very bad business deal, I'd better say something. Right? Because I don't want you to go into business and losing lots of money. True. Because if I was about to go into business with a criminal, you do business with someone. I want to give you something maybe more pertinent to you. You date a guy, and you go on 5 dates, and you realize this guy's a terrible, terrible person. For whatever reason, something very clear to you, you have first-hand information, this guy is nasty. Bad news. And you break up with him. Finish. 2 weeks later, you get a call from your friend. Hi, I'm dating a great guy. Really? What's his name? Name your ex-boyfriend. Do you say something? Or do you not say something? You don't say something? Why'd you say no? Let them judge, says Jessica. You know what? I learned the hard way, and I learned, and I got out of it. No one told me anything. So let them go out of them and find out for themselves.
I would tell them.
You would tell them. What would you tell them?
Just that I had a bad experience. Obviously, judge for yourself, but give them a warning.
Yeah, because you're not choosing the problem.
You're just warning them. You're not saying, break up with them.
So we're going to define Lashon Hara as causing damage to another person. It could be through your speech. You're causing damage to another individual, being this girl and this guy. So by saying bad stuff, it could be you're affecting them. And we're going to see, however, that you should say something. The way you say it, what you say, how, we're going to see various rules and regulations as to how you're meant to do it. But you are meant to say something. You can't see another person suffer. It's based upon this idea that if you were the one who's about to start dating this terrible axe murderer, right, with his, you know, gun collection under his pillow, you'd expect a good friend to say something to you as well. You know. Now, how you say it, where you say it, when you say it, we're going to do, there's going to be various rules, but it comes down to this basic idea, right, that I wouldn't want it done to me, so I'm going to do it to somebody else. And if this guy's a terrible person, and I got first-hand information, and I don't exaggerate, and this person would want to know, and it's done in a very non-expressive, you know, dramatic way, and I don't add stuff to it. Oh, and by the way, he dresses really badly as well. Right? I keep it to the facts. I am obligated, possibly obligated, to say something. You can't just, like, let your friend go down into, you know, this terrible business situation or relationship situation or financial situation. Yeah.
Is it a bad thing not to tell them?
Yeah. Yeah, it could be a bad thing not to tell them. We're going to see that this idea of speaking, Lashon Hara, we're actually going to connect, the Torah itself puts it in the same pasuk as standing by while your friend's blood is shed. Lo tamar al dam re'echa. Don't stand by your friend's blood. We're actually going to see that just being inactive is not okay. You have to be proactive and actually say something. Because if you were in that situation, you'd want them to, I guess, tell you, wouldn't you? So it's not enough just to sit by and say nothing. Right? It may be you actually have to proactively go after them and say, by the way, now it's again, there's many, many applications of this, and it depends how, where, when. It's not so simple. You have to ask questions. Okay? But I'll be giving you the Chofetz Chaim lists the rules. He lists the rules of this. So it really comes down to respect, okay, and having mercy, rachmanut, on other people. That's the concept which Unklos had mentioned before. Yeah. And the Sefer Chenech says that means that if you love your fellow like you love yourself, you're not going to steal from them, you're not going to be unfaithful with their wife, you're not going to defraud them, you're not going to insult them, you're not going to trespass on their property. Right? So we see that's maybe why it's a klal gadol, because so many other mitzvot are related to this one mitzvah. Like everything else. It all comes down to this, because so much of our daily interaction comes down to this idea of loving someone else like you love yourself. Yeah.
What if it's the other way around? Like, not like you've dated this guy yourself, so you're telling one of, like, your girlfriends, but if a guy asks you about a girl, and you don't think the girl is a good girl for him.
So very, very good. Many people have opinions. Actually, all Jews have lots of opinions. It can't just be hearsay or I don't think. You've got to be very careful, you see. First of all, you need to have first-hand information or something that's very, very tangible. Not enough to have, I heard from someone else, I don't think it's got to be based upon on some kind of reality. So firsthand is important. Okay? And if you can't get it firsthand, then you've got to really verify it secondhand. You hear? It's not so simple just to, well, I don't know, I don't think he's such a good guy. I once saw him do something. You know what I'm saying? Or I heard this about him. That's secondhand. That maybe is not sufficient. A lot of people misinterpret a lot of things. And this could be a zivug. It could be the person she's meant to be with. Not simple just to completely knock it out of the way. Hearsay is not enough. In short, to that. Okay? I want you to imagine the following thing. You are in the kitchen preparing some food. And you're cutting some meat. And while you're cutting the meat with your right hand, you cut into your left hand. Happens. And then you see the person doing this slap their right hand with their left hand. Like that. And say, stupid hand, that really hurt. What'd you do that for? Or you see a person walking down the street and they trip up on a stone with their right foot. And then you see the left foot kick the right foot and say, you stupid foot, you could have killed us. What would you think about such an individual?
A little strange.
Drinking the wrong liquids. Smoking the wrong cigarette. Who knows what? Something is not right with this individual. Why? Why is this a strange thing? Why is that image so, like, comical to us? Why is that so funny? Because you're one person. You're one individual. Fair? Makes sense. Right? You're not going to blame your right hand. It was an accident. Right? You can't blame yourself. Imagine if you saw your spouse, your husband, or your wife, in the same way.
Is that what you're meant to do?
Not stab them. I was just going to say, no, you're not meant to do that. But you're meant to see, how can I hurt my Ezer Kenegdo, who we are now Basar Echad, we're one flesh. Because it's one person. I can't be insulting. It's tough. It's like left hand and right hand. It doesn't make sense. It's ridiculous. And imagine if you could extend that to everyone else in the Jewish world. They were actually one big united body. So I can't upset Jen, because if I'm nasty to her and I hurt her, I'm actually hurting myself. And just like if my right hand cut my left hand wouldn't hit my right hand. What would I say? That was a silly thing to do. I'm not going to do that again. I'll be more careful with knives. We're very good at making excuses for our own terrible behaviors. When someone else does the same thing, if someone's cutting a piece of meat and cut my hand, I'll be like, what are you doing? That's a very high level. But the smug, the Sefer Mitzvah Gedolot, actually gives that analogy. Okay? And he says that if a person's among your people, and this is a good person, who is under the category of someone you have to love, now we're going to see there are people you can hate. Not everyone falls under this category. Some people are just not good, and they repeatedly do bad things. It may be they don't fall under this category. We're not saying you should walk around, hug everyone, kiss every single Jew, you know what I'm saying, and say, I love you. Okay? Now, as we spoke earlier, we have to try to give them benefit of the doubt. But if a person acts in a hateful way all the time, yep, and they're a bad person, then it could be you have to hate them. And we'll see what that means as well. Yeah?
Is this only for Jews, though?
This is, halavai, we could just make it for Jews. Yes. Doesn't mean you have to hate non-Jews. Heaven forbid. We're not saying that. We're saying this level of ahava is needed among the Jewish people. Yeah. Yes. This is specifically among our people. And don't be perturbed by that. As I told you, imagine someone comes to your front door. It's a complete stranger. Can I have some money, please? I was kicked out of the house by my husband. And you're like, here, take $10. Is that a good thing to do? Very, very nice. $10, complete stranger at your door. It's a mitzvah. And they go away. Then they open the door, and it's your mother. And she's like, Dad just kicked me out of the house again. And you're like, here, take $10. Good thing or bad thing?
Bad thing.
Bad thing. Why? Two people, bad circumstances, same $10. Why is that a bad thing? Because it's your family. You bring a ring, give a cup of coffee. You expect a higher level of connection to the person who's in your family. All the Jewish people are going to see are revim zet lezeh, are responsible one for another. And you have an obligation towards them. Do you have to give everything to everyone all the time? No. We're going to see various concentric circles, right, when it comes to close family, distant family, right? Jewish people in Israel, Jewish people in the community, the rest of the Jewish people, then the outside non-Jewish world. There's various like concentric circles starting in from the bullseye outwards. We're going to go through the various levels of responsibility stuck we have to give. But the concept still stands. So we go back to the beginning and we say, why don't take revenge and bear a grudge? Because I wouldn't want someone to take revenge and bear a grudge against me. I don't want them to judge me favorably. How do I know? Because it's a reflexive thing. That's how I'm going to relate to others. Okay, so it was put in the reflexive, it was put in back to me because I'm going to use myself as the way to determine that. I'm going to use my desire to love myself, to love my money, to love my body, to love everything else, the way. And if I think someone else is going to be hurt in some way, so I want that to stop because I don't want it to stop against me. Are you hearing this very, very important idea, ladies? Yes.
I don't understand what the difference is between like hate and dislike. Like, how do you? Like, you say we are allowed.
We're going
to
see.
Love everybody.
There are certain times.
No, I know, but I'm just saying. A regular person, like they're not particularly evil or whatever.
Oh no! Like, they will fall in. No. Ah. So that is a problem. That is called sinat chinam. And that's considered to be one of the worst things. And that's actually what destroyed the Beit HaMikdash, of having baseless hatred. I just don't like them.
But is that considered hatred? Like not
that,
like
is, that is, absolutely. If you're, now, what you're going to do is, if you have baseless hatred, what's the end result of that? You're not going to treat them respectfully. You're not going to be nice to them. You're going to, you know what I'm saying? Just hating someone for no good reason? I mean, you're not insane. You're basing it upon something, but that something is not valid. I just don't like the way they walk. I don't like the way they dress.
I'm not saying that.
But some people do. Some people will choose. Some people don't like some people because they look like someone who was nice to them. And you know, their doppelganger was nasty to me, right? It's the in-word now. I was obsessed with like, their doppelganger said they look like someone. Yeah. The other way around. Some people like someone because they look like someone that was nice to me many years ago. I mean, that's... It's true. You have that experience before? You ever had that experience? You like someone because like, someone looked like them and was nice to you? Have had that before? No? Am I going crazy?
Yeah, it makes sense.
What, me going crazy makes sense? Oh, no, the idea makes sense. Okay, fine. Yes, it's great.
I'm trying to say, like,
yeah.
You have reasonings, like personal reasonings, personal encounters, or whatever. That doesn't necessarily that mean that that person's an evil person, but
true.
You can't help it. From what you've experienced, you don't like that.
Yeah, the question is, what did you experience, and what is that based upon? And it could be that you're obligated to try to make friends with that individual. You know, we're going to go further into this. We're just starting off the topic. It's a big topic. It's a klal gadol. You, well, the Rambam's going
to
say, if someone did something to you that makes you not like them, you're obligated to go up to them and say, why did you do this to me?
Because
I didn't like that. Privately, you're obligated to do that. What you did so-and-so to me. I'm upset with you. Please don't do that again.
Yeah.
You don't, we don't turn the other cheek. That is not a Jewish concept. That is a Christian concept. I've turned the other cheek. Right? I mean, when the Christians do it, they're like, to the Jew, they turn the other cheek so I can slap that side as well. You know. So that's not a Jewish idea, no. Yeah. That's a very good question.
Or if they hurt your friend.
That's a very, very good question. Leah, I want to get into that. Are you allowed to act on somebody else's behalf and fix a situation for them? That could be. That could be? Yeah.
Very good question.